about to get to the end of the race. Ramhupa, you are also part of the team. We have missed your face so much. We believe that when you come now, you didn't go back to your stance of not being comfortable with us. We are very, going to be very sweet this time. We can assure you. Okay. You are very welcome, Sasa people. Can you then go on with your work?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. My colleagues from the entities, we are going to present today the 2018-2019 Annual Performance Plan. And
my screen is black. I don't know what I did to it. I don't want to blame people, but it's really, we don't know where to cover it now. But I won't be able to, not unless I move away and look at this one. Let me do that. If it can't work, I'll find a seat. Oh, okay, no. We are in good hands.
There's power, it's not power.
No, if it can't help. Oh, it was big. It could have been easy for me to do this. Okay.
Is it okay?
Yeah. Yes.
Genius.
It's a guru.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It gives us honor as SASA to present the APP for 2018-19, arguably the largest expanding entity on the continent on social security assistance. And so far, Madam Chair, we would want to also, in the process of presenting this APP, take the committee into confidence that we are making strides in ensuring that we comply with the Constitutional Court judgment and the orders that were subsequently issued. To that extent, we would want to also indicate that after the court order of the 3rd of March 2018, we were required that we present a monthly report to the Constitutional Court, and we have done so within the prescribed time on the 30th. Both the affidavit and the reports were signed and submitted to the court. Also, we would want to just highlight, before we go into the technical content of the APP, to indicate that we have moved into the intensification of government-to-government collaboration in terms of entering into a service agreement with the South African Post Office. And we would continue to work in that context to ensure that we deliver the social security services within government. We have already insourced quite a number of functions in line with our commitment that we will be insourcing functions that are currently run by the outsource partner, which is CPS. And some of the functions are now being done by the South African Post Office. And we also, as SASA, have taken over some of the functions, and these would include the beneficiary enrollment on the biometrics, and also the management of the deductions through Section Regulation 26A. And also that while we are busy with the transition, we have noticed that, yes, there is an anticipated growth of beneficiaries that are registering for the grants, and we are looking forward to ensuring that in the process of transition, there is new beneficiary experience that people will be experiencing. And we are looking forward to about 17.7 million grants to be paid by the end of 2019 March. But in the same process, in terms of the reaching out to communities, the program on ICROP will continue, And also we'll just make sure that the profiling is intensified, and we will now use the biometrics to ensure that people are identified properly and there is no double dipping of any sort across provinces or across towns. And we will also continue to make sure that within the reduced budget that was pronounced by the National Treasury, we will make do with what we have, but make sure that the beneficiaries continue to receive the service that they deserve. Therefore, it will call upon SASSA to reprioritize in many areas to make sure that the social security assistance continues. Now, Madam Chair, with me is my colleagues that will assist in the presentation. I have Rapahle Ramkgopa, the Executive Manager for Strategy and Business Development. She will take us through the technical content of the APP, while at the end of the presentation, the CFO will highlight the salient points of our budget proposition for the 2018-2019 to support the implementation of the APP. With your indulgence, Madam Chair, shall I request Madam Rapahle Ramkgopa to present the technical content.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Honourable Members. It's my pleasure to present the SASSA APP. In terms of the presentation outline, I'll forgive the purpose, the introduction, strategic priorities, the program performance plans for both Program 1 and Program 2, financial outlook, and the recommendation. The CFO will help me on the measures relating to finance. The purpose of the presentation is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the Portfolio Committee of Social Development on the SASSA 2018-2019 performance plan and the budget. Our vision is still a leader in the delivery of social security services, and we aspire to administer social security services to eligible children, older persons, and people with disabilities. And the slogan for SASSA is paying the right social grant to the right person at the right time, njalo. In terms of our work, we are aligned to the National Development Plan in terms of Outcome 13, which is an inclusive and responsive social protection system, and the sub-outcome that the work of SASSA is aligned to is deepening social assistance and extending the scope for social security. Our strategic outcome-oriented goal is to expand access to social assistance and creating a platform for future payment of social security benefits. In terms of introduction and the context, SASSA is presenting its annual performance plan, which is informed by a number of significant developments that impact on the agency, some of which the acting CEO has already highlighted. But key among the things that impact on our work in this current coming financial year is the agreement that we have with the South African Post Office, which will support SASSA in terms of facilitating payment for social grants. And in this regard, I should indicate that we have also started a process whereby we are designating SAPO as a payment option by SASSA in terms of in line with the regulation. The Constitutional Court also, the judgment with the Constitutional Court has also had an impact in terms of how we view our work and in terms of how we do the phase-in, in particular in relation to the cash payments. Also, we also as the organization and as the sector, also with the involvement of the IMC, there was a decision to say we need to go back and review the way we do the cash payment method. Therefore, there's some initiatives that we have introduced in terms of how we handle cash payments into the future. And there's also the issue around internal review and reprioritization of some of the projects so that we can take the money and align them to key institutional elements of the organization. The priorities of the organization still remain the same, being to reduce income poverty by providing social assistance to eligible individuals. We still continue to strive to improve service delivery, and we also want to improve the organizational efficiency. And the last element in terms of priority is institutionalization of social grants payment system within government as a whole. In terms of the program, SASSA has two programs, being Program 1 and Program 2. Program 1, which is administration, has four sub-programs. The first one is executive management. The second one is corporate services. The third is information and communication technology. And the fourth one is financial management. Sub-program 2 is benefits administration and support, and the sub-programs are benefits administration and payments administration. I'll go straight into the targets per program, starting with program 1. In terms of program 1, as I indicated, one of our major priorities is to improve organizational efficiency, and the objective here is to uphold good governance. And in doing that, one of the critical measures that we'll be doing is to ensure that we investigate all reported fraud and theft cases, and we'll ensure that 70% of reported cases are finalized in the given period time frame. And we'll also ensure strive to maintain an updated risk register. We'll also conduct 30 internal audit reviews on high-risk areas. The high-risk areas in this particular case include payment, it includes supply chain management, it also includes areas such as finance, in the finance area also, and also on disability management. We'll also work towards achieving an unqualified audit outcome, knowing that we are coming from a situation now where we have been qualified in the past financial year. The other objective that we have is to provide effective and efficient human capital management. In terms of human capital management, one of the major priorities that we'll be focusing on in this financial year is to review the organizational structure in order to ensure that it incorporates the payment administration function. When we go on the structures, most of the functions are mainly on grants administration up to approval, but we don't have specialists that would deal with the payment function. So we are working on reviewing this organizational structure and realigning it to the new functions such as enrollment that we have taken over, the functions such as how to do the overall reconciliations and coordination in terms of the payment arena. We'll also review the HR plan and the capacity model, which will support the organizational structure. In terms of the funded posts, we will strive to ensure that 95% of funded vacant posts are filled. And also, one of the things that you've been asking us is that we haven't been doing consequence management. So we have elevated the issues of labor relations into the annual performance plan so that we can report regularly around them. So we'll be ensure that all labor relations cases are finalized within the prescribed time frame. We have had challenges in the past with regards to appeals, so we are working on strengthening that area as well. We'll also ensure beneficiary records management are safely kept. Over the past year, we have managed to ensure to get into partnership in terms of co-sourcing of beneficiary records management centers across the different provinces. So the one that is still outstanding is the Eastern Cape, which we will finalize in this coming financial year. After the co-sourcing, the next part of the process will be the automation of the records management centers, which will continue so that in future we can go into electronic records and move away from manual records. As part of our strategy to manage some of the things that were raised earlier, like our infrastructure, we have a big infrastructure as the organization, as indicated in our previous engagements with the committee. We have nine regional offices, 46 district offices, 386 local offices, more than 1,000 service points, and not talking about the plus minus 10,000 pay points. All of them have infrastructure. So we have prioritized that this year. Part of it, now we want to go back to our infrastructure plan and see how we do, because we have managed to improve some of our local offices. But when we go to service points where we are sharing with other organizations, we haven't been doing well. And in some cases, you find that it's a service point, but it's open 5 days a week, and you have more people that are coming in. So we need to find a strategy. But we found that we were doing things in isolation, so we've decided to prioritize the review of the plan. On ICT, our priority is to ensure that the biometric identity access management system for SOCPEN users in particular is implemented. Already the process has started, and what we are doing is to ensure that all staff that are working with beneficiaries in particular, and all of us at the later stage, we all get into the system using the biometric instead of passwords, because when people were defrauding the state, they would use the password or steal passwords from each other. So in order to deal with the corruption and reduce corruption in relation to grants, we are introducing the biometric identity access management. We've also deployed the biometric enrollment of beneficiaries. This is a service that was entirely done by CPS. Now we can assure you that we have tested it in all the regions, and by the 1st of May we'll be rolling it across the whole country. So this, in this service, CPS will be totally phased out before even May. On upgrade of the network connectivity, as we grow in terms of our work, our connectivity is now low, so we are busy upgrading the network connectivity across the country so that we don't have a situation where people keep on saying that the system was down. And in terms of information management, we'll develop data governance framework. We'll also implement the business intelligence solution, in particular for grant administration and grants payment. Under financial management, we are planning to ensure that all social assistance payments, whether done by SAPO or done through the banks or any other institutions, there's a central reconciliation area where we can reconcile and be able to check whether we need refunds or whether we need any, whether there was overfunding or anything. So we need a system that will be done, and it will be managed over under finance. We continue to strive to ensure that all our eligible suppliers are paid within 30 days. And on in terms of the social assistance debtors, we'll also work on ensuring that at least less than 5% of the social assistance debts are recovered and submitted for write-off. And financial misconduct, we'll also ensure that we finalize all financial misconduct cases within the 90 days. And this links also to the labor relations. We have elevated both of them to start elevating this measure of consequence management. I'll now move to program two, which is benefits administration and support. The first target that we are looking at under the objective improved grant application process, we are looking at ensuring that new grant applications are processed, and we are targeting at least 1.6 million. This figure is informed by the historic figures that we've had. We had an exceptional year in the past year where we had about 2 million, but what we have realized is that the 2 million take-up was more the reapplications, so the new applicants remain out at around 1.6 million. And then we're also working on reducing the turnaround. If you remember, we've moved from 90 days, 30 days. Now we are moving from 15 days that we were working on in the last year. Now we are reducing it further to 10 days. And as indicated in our previous engagements, 85% of our applications are processed within 1 day. However, those that are done at satellite offices and at service points and disability do take time to process. We also want to increase the number of grants that are in payment from 17.4 million to 17.7 million by end of 2018-19, and this will be done at an estimated cost of 163 billion, and our primary clients remains the older persons, the children, and the persons with disabilities. In terms of the children between 0 and 1, we still want to put them as a priority, and this year we are targeting 560,000 children. On terms of provision of social relief of distress, the target in this financial year is to deal with 252,833 SRD applications, which we seek to process, and the total amount that is available for these purposes is 410 million. Further to that, we have also decided that out of the 410, at least 30% will be dedicated towards cooperatives and smaller business, and we've provided the breakdown of the regions in terms of the SRD applications that we will provide. We also have the objective to reduce the inclusion and exclusion errors, and part of our priority is to process the foster care grants reviews in collaboration with the Department of Social Development, and the number of grants that are due for review in this current financial year is 130,976. We are aware that the court has given us some leave, but we still want to continue to process them because we don't want to take advantage of whatever the court outcome has been. In terms of the raising awareness of beneficiaries on the rights and obligation relating to social grants, we will continue with the ICROP, which we have identified 309 wards that we'll be working on ICROP as part of the key program for SASA. We'll also continue to communicate to the beneficiary on the benefits of social grants, particularly through electronic payment channels and through other through SAPO as a partner of choice. And I think when I'm emphasizing the electronic banking channels, we also taking cue from the Constitutional Court order, which has been said that in the past we have not been giving people options. So we are encouraging so people can know what are the benefits that are available to them so that they can make informed choices. In terms of management and administration of payment services, the first priority for us is to phase out the current service provider by 30 September in relation to cash payments. The second priority is to ensure that we phase in the new service provider come in September. We are aware that the court order says September, but our own plan is to ensure that by July, August, at least most of the beneficiaries have received the new SASSA card, which is the new issued by SAPO, so that should there be any hitches, we know that at least there's a tool that they will utilize. So SAPO will be phased in from April until so that by September they can be able to roll their working in all areas that is possible. We are also working on migration of existing beneficiaries from CPS to SAPO. We also will be managing the new service providers for social grant payments. On the insourcing of payment services, as the CEO has indicated, we have fully phased out the services. CPS is no longer doing any deduction management on behalf of SASSA. This service is done in-house by SASSA itself in terms of Regulation 26A. And the service that we do entails the following. We collect mandates from the beneficiaries who are giving authorization of whether there must be a deduction. We do exceptions management, and we also maintain the database and beneficiaries for insurers. And we also work for to facilitate the payments of those insurances. In terms of the other area that we have indicated earlier was that of biometrics, to say this is the service that was done by CPS. We have also phased out CPS. So by the 1st of May, all SASSA offices will be doing biometric enrollment, and it will be done by us, and even the infrastructure and the equipment we have purchased is all SASSA equipment now that we are using for that. And the next slide talks about the review and management of the cash payment strategy. Here we are working on reducing the cash pay points by 20%. What we have done is to go to where SAPO outlets are and where there's other payment infrastructure and merchants, and we have ring-fenced that. Already we have identified that at least 2,077 pay points are within the same vicinity. Some are even in the same yard with SAPO. So where those areas are existing, we have decided that those people will be migrated into the SAPO outlet, and what will happen, we'll have to remove those pay points. So we are working on a strategy now for community consultation to implement that. This will be supported by progressive movement of cash beneficiaries to electronic channels, which also is targeting 20%. In addition to that, we are appointing second-tier merchants, 45 of them, which will work closely with SAPO in areas where SAPO does not have outlets, in order to ensure that those alternative merchants are the ones that are providing services to beneficiaries. We'll also be monitoring large cash pay bonds. And in terms of the cash payments, as indicated, there will be areas where it's cash payments where we'll encourage SAPO to go on certain days to provide services over time. So some those that are not fully utilized will have to close. Those that are required will ensure that we take services there, either by SAPO or by any institution that has the infrastructure to do so. I'll hand over to the CFO for finance.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will be sharing with the committee about the financing strategy in relation to the APP presented by Mayor Ramaphosa. If we look at terms of how the baseline was for SASSA in terms of the E&E, we for the year 2018-19, we were supposed to receive 8.4 billion That's the amount that we're supposed to. But you look actually that we have got a baseline reduction of 147 million, which was part of the E&E document that was published. The SASA baseline has been shrinking from 2016-17 with 158 million in 2016-17, 268 million in 2017-18, and in 18-19 it's 147 million. So the allocation that we have, which will fund the APP, is 8.2 billion. But if you compare it in terms of the 17-18 and 18-19, you could see that there's at least a growth of 11%. That 8.2 billion, I'll talk to it actually in the following slide. It is made of the transfer that we received from the department of 7.7 billion, which is the transfer that the CFO from DSD has spoken about, plus the retained surplus funding of 515 million. That's where the 8.2 billion is made. So we received money from as a transfer, and we also had money as part of the retained cash surplus. Next slide, please. This does bring actually to say in the high level the funding model for SASA. If members could really consider, you'll find that of the 7.7 billion, which is the 7.7 billion that we receive as a transfer, we take 3.4 billion, which goes to COE, which is 45% of that 7.7 billion. 400 million, which it's made of the contracts that we have with CETA and the software, largely the ICT, it's about 400 million. We have got the handling fees at 2.3 billion that deals with the amount that we used to pay to CPS. But from the 1st of April, we'll not be paying CPS this amount of money. Treasury has filed their recommendation yesterday in terms of what they think it should be the transition fee, which the court still have to consider and so other parties to consider. They were talking about 51 rand transaction fee for the traditional cash pay point to really pay per recipient, and they were saying 19.48 for any other recipient that receive money from a merchant or an ATM that uses biometric CVM. And they were saying that where we are going to continue allowing CPS to allow for the enrollment, they are saying that 108 rand for enrollment, it should be more than enough. These are not the fees that actually have been approved as yet by the court, but only when it has been done, one will be able to know. So that money will come from that. So if ever then we look at the funding in relation to that model, if ever then we keep 2.5 million to be paid by CPS, then we're looking at about 1.5 billion of the 2.3 billion used. If we're keeping it actually at 2 million of grant recipient being paid by CPS, we're looking at about 1 billion if ever then you had the whole year. But if you're not having the whole year, then we're looking at about 500 million. So for the 2.5 million, you're looking at about 750 million. That's probably for the 6 months, if ever then we were to pay at an average of 2.5 million. For the medical assessments, it's about 106 million. For the lease payments, we have about 314 lease payments. They cost about 405 million. That excludes the portion that we pay in terms of the leases for the pay points. The property payments, which is the cleaning services contracts that we have, the security contracts that we have, and also the municipal services, we're paying 466 million. So if you add all those, just the major one, which is about the six main categories, those six, you're actually going to be spending 7.1 billion. So of the 7.7 billion that you receive from as a transfer from the DSD, you left with 585 million. That is the amount that you able to finance the other operational costs. The other operational costs that will be financed from that is your communication, your records management centers, your fleet costs, your maintenance and repair, your stationery, your training and development, travel, audit costs, and bank charges. So that will have to be financed from the 585 million, with probably the larger portion of that amount going into one around the traveling, because currently with the whole issue of the CARDSAR program that will have to be in, and the communication, which probably between the two of them, you're likely to spend about 200 million over this time period, over the year. So that is basically what it is. So included in that will be the 515 million, which we're saying that we're taking from the retained surplus, and that's where the 8.2 billion comes in. 8.2 billion is made of the 7.7 billion plus the 515 million, which makes the 8.2 billion, which we are using to finance the APP. The next slide just only shows the classification to say that the COE will cost 3.4 billion, goods and services will cost 4.7 billion, and we transferred 35 million. That's 8.2 billion in terms of the economic classification. That's how it will be classified in terms of the books of SASAM. If we want to consider the percentage share of all the cost center, major cost centers, which is head office and the regions, this is the percentage of the 8.2 billion. So how much of each region actually is sharing in terms of the 8.2 billion, with Eastern Cape taking 9%, KZN taking 10%, you will see the other regions ranging between 5 and 6%. Head office has the largest share of 47%, primarily because the 2.3 billion, which is the handling fee, actually sits in head office. And most of the contracts relating to the ICT are centralized in head office. Hence, you see head office having 47% of the share of the 8.2 billion. Then when we look at the silent issues in relation to that, I think we are saying that 92% of the agency's budget actually is between the COE and the contracts that we have. So largely it means that you're likely to spend on a straight line projection, because the contracts for leases and other contracts will be spending in line with the agreement, as long as the deliverables for the contracts are received and the COE is you have appointed people, you will have to pay the people. But if you have not appointed them, then that's where the savings will come into play. And we're saying that the leases and the property payments just take a sizable amount, and the computer services, I already spoken about this. We also note that actually we had to make some few adjustments in relation to the 1% VAT increase in terms of the contracts that are currently running, because the VAT portion of that contract will have to be made good of SASA when we are implementing the contract. We, for the purpose of the committee, we have depicted largely to say where the 515 million will be spent on. These are the projects and programs that will be implemented during the year. Many of them are actually running currently. They have been contracted. All that we're monitoring now is the implementation, and we are already doing the scanning solution. You understand that Madam Hooper said that we wanted to automate our registries. So we already got a contract about the scanning solution to scan all the documents when we take applications. So that is linked to that funding. You look at the ICROP, we're looking at about 309 of these areas that we're visiting in terms of the targets for the ICROP would be funded from that across the regions, given that we still have to really increase the footprints talking to beneficiaries during this time. Then we'll have to really make good of that arrangement in terms of meeting our communities and speaking to our communities about the changes that are happening across the country in terms of the CARDSAR with SAPO. So that's the money that we'll be spending. And we've got the servers that we are actually, we have Procord, which is the system that we're using, which is Oracle. We have the business intelligence solution that we have procured. The contract is already running. We've got the biometric. The biometric in this instance is twofold. The one is for the staff, which we already procured, and we've already varied the contract to include the one for the beneficiaries, so we don't have to really go out on tender. So we've at least spent an additional about 7 million just to make sure that the solution that has been procured for the staff can also cater for for the beneficiaries. We also have three offices that we're constructing, which is the local offices in Northern Cape. We already partnered with IDT. Two of the projects have been awarded. One is not been awarded by IDT. So they're helping us just around the JTG just to increase the footprint, because then people were left stranded there. We did not have the offices, so we are building offices in that area. We're also looking at about 5 million actually to look at data cleanup project in relation to the debtors. I think we have already got about a billion debt book on people that are owing. And this is part of the project that we have to really get a service provider that assists us just in the recovery, but also those that are not recovered, we can at least find a way to write them off. The transition project has to do with the change management project, which is what we're doing. We've made an allowance of 100 million that will be able to cover the operational needs in relation to that project to make sure that is funded. We have to increase the bandwidth within the SASA offices. We have allowed that the infrastructure in local offices so that we can at least be able to really process. So if you're scanning documents from a local office, it should be able to have an IT support that supports such a process. So we actually allowed 44 million to be upgrading that infrastructure. We understand that there have been legal costs that have been happening in terms of the areas that we have been, constitutional court and whatever. We've made allowance for that. I could say to the committee that we have tried our level best to make sure that we fund everything that is necessary to be funded in terms of what we're presenting as an APP within SASA. Thank you very much, Chair. I can hand over back to Mayor Mpho.
Portfolio Committee note and approve SASA's annual performance plan and budget for 2018-19 financial.
Honourable members, it's in your hands. Toilet, you didn't speak. Mama Abrams, Mama Kanyile is coming for the first time. Mama Sako. Oh, Miss Wendy. So in that arrangement.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, only one thing. I just need clarity on the issue of the phasing in of the card, issuing of the new Sako card. Vis-a-vis what was presented to us, that the cards that they are using are going to expire at the end of the year, which is in December. So can I have a clarity on that, Chair? Because there is a confusion. Immediately when the SASA card, there was information that was with the card. The information was not clear, because the information was like as if the card, these cards that they are having currently are not going to be in use after September. Can we really clarify so that people can understand what is going on with the cards? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sis Bongi gives me more time to talk. Thank you. Yes. Thank you for the presentation and welcome to the CEO, the Guru. And I hope that he won't be vanishing soon, but that we see him and good luck in his job. I've asked this morning the ensuring the 95% of the funded post, Chairperson. I'll just repeat myself again. Will be filled. Does this include all acting positions in executive management level? And then also, I've asked this question too, the CSO's office highest vacancy rate is 8 out of 9, and this is concerning to us. In the medium term, SASA plans to reduce cash payments by 43%. What policy directive is behind SASA's decision to set these targets, and how would this influence the cash payments in the rural areas? 70% reported of fraud and theft and corruption. What happens to the 30%, if that's just like not important. And then also SASA's network connectivity infrastructure upgrade at 116 offices. How does that get divided into the whole of South Africa and provinces, 116 offices? How would that be spread? Chairperson, I'm happy to hear the biometric identification access management system for management. But I would have loved to hear that it would actually eliminate and not reduce, because then what is the purpose of such a system if you're just going to reduce it? I know in the beginning it will be reduced, but it should actually eliminate complete fraud and everything that goes with it. So otherwise that would be a waste of funds. What infrastructure does SAPO have? If I heard correctly, SAPO would be going out to pay points. I was under the impression that SAPO is like stations, you know, they don't have mobile units. And then also all the lease payments that's being paid monthly. Will there be an opportunity for SASA to eventually rent to buy so that they can own the properties? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. And we appreciate the presentation that we have received. I just want to refer the House to page 11, where the report indicates that in the year 2018-19, they'll investigate reported fraud, theft, and corruption cases. We want to find out how many cases were concluded in the year 2017 and 2018. The reason I'm asking this question, I just want to check if the 70% is going to be achievable. And the last bulletin there, it speaks about achieving an unqualified audit outcome. I picked up that in the NDA's report on page 14, they're also indicating that they want to achieve the unqualified audit outcome. So my question would be, in the previous financial year findings, have they started to address those findings? And what measures do they have in place to ensure that they achieve this unqualified audit outcome? And on page 12, where they talk about ensuring that 95% of funded posts are filled, I'd like to find out if does this include the post of the executive managers? Because if we will all remember very well, in the last meeting where we invited the executive managers from all the 9 provinces, if I'm not mistaken, the only post that was permanent there, it was the one for the executive manager from Gauteng, and all the other executive managers were acting, and there was one that has been an acting position since 2012. When the CFO was making his presentation on property payments, he indicated that some of the money is going to their cleaners for their contract. I'd also like to find out if the cleaners, do they have a reason they're not hiring the cleaners permanently? Because we need to consider that in our country we have a very high rate of unemployment. And if we hire these people on a contractual basis, for the other days where we are not calling them in, they wouldn't know where their next meal is going to come from. But if we are in a position where we are going to create permanent positions, we are going to create stability. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the SASA for the presentation and welcome the new acting CEO. And of course, join the chairperson to say it's good to see Ms. Ramakgopa. Chairperson, I just want to know when the minister earlier on presented or just briefed us briefly, she also around the appointment of the acting CEO talked about the previous acting CEO going back to KZN. I would like to know if the same status applies to the project lead who also had come from Northwest, and if she's also asked to go back to Northwest, and what is the status there. And also, I think when I was listening to the presentation, I cannot emphasize more the issue of communication, of all these things that are happening, because it's very good for us here in Parliament to hear all these, these updates and movements and things that are going to be happening in the interest of the beneficiaries. But it would also be nicer if they get to know all those things, like the moving from one card to another, the enrollment by SAPO from April to September, just for them to know and pace themselves to actually be part of those changes. because there is a lot of uncertainty, if I may call it that. I hope I'm not exaggerating, but there's a certain level of uncertainty about what is going on, and one is getting these inquiries on a daily basis about what can I do now? Is my card okay? I received this message. Someone told me to go to support and all those things. If we can just, in a sense, communicate the whole process to the beneficiary so that they know, as I say, how to pace themselves so that nobody is falls between the cracks when the transition, while the transition is happening. And Chair, I just wanted to know also about the last presentation. I know this is about the budget, but I think it affects it is part of this presentation, just to know about the I think it was the CFO who was saying that the handling fee, talking about the handling fee, I want to know this handling fee, however the amount is, which is huge, are we saying that once the institutionalization is fully operational, there will be a change in the handling fee, or will just be within SASSA and not going to the people that are handling the work at the moment? How does that affect the actual numbers in terms of budget, as it were? And also the CFO, I think he's saying this for the second time, that by not appointing people, we are saving money. I am saying that, unless I'm proven to the contrary, that we do need to appoint people because that improves the level of services. Because people are, we talked at length this morning about the length of queues and complaints and things like that. And one might even add that when we appoint these people, can we please appoint the people that are fit for the purpose, because of the challenges that were aired this morning about the thing, the treatment of the beneficiaries at frontline spaces. And lastly, Chair, I have asked this question before, and I can't remember what the response was to that. That why is SASSA involved in construction? I just need to know. I'm not sure that I heard the answer to that. Why is SASSA in construction and not in grant payment? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mason, do you have a hand? Oh, okay. Yes, you can come, Masondi, and Mama Oti coming later.
Ngiyabonga, Chairperson. Tuzoba nombuzo, imibuzo nje mbalwa. Okuqala, ndicinga uba u-CPS lo nithetha ngaye okokuba ngoSeptemba uzobe singasakhulumi ngaye. Ingaba ninengqiniseko engakanani eyokokubana uzawube ebe ephumile totally ezandleni zenu uSibes? Kuba kaloku kudala befana basisakhulumi ngaye, kodwa sisathetha ngaye nanamhlanje. Into ebonisa ubana akafuni udeda umbolungo wakhe, caba jaka mnandi. Ndiyayicinga loo nto. So ngumbuzo endinawo ke lowo wokuqala, iba ingaba ninengqiniseko engakanani napha kuSeptemba uba uzawube sele engekho phakathi kwenu. Okwesibini ke, kuyabonakala okokubana phaa kupage 52 we-APP kuyabonakala okokubana i-office ka-CEO inezithuba ezininji kakhulu ezifanele bazibe ziyavalwa. Isicelo ke sesoba kunyanzelekile bazibe zivaliwe ezo zithuba ezo, zininji kakhulu. Akho kangako ke, Chairperson, ndehla nomcinga. Inkosi.
Mfuthi, Chairperson eating Kirelo Umcinga. I'm on the right of Honorable Selene.
Okay.
No, Chairperson, mine is under organizational efficiency. The document said there's a review of organizational structure to incorporate the new payment administration function. Obviously, after the drama of SASSA, we expected to have a change management in terms of SASSA, good governance. And here you said you're ensuring that 95% of funded posts are to be filled. How did you came to this 95%, whereas you will review your organizational structure? Because now we talk about the new organizational design. How do you know how many human capital are you going to have in SASSA? Again, on the issue of HR plan, I think HR plan is the one that's supposed to guide in terms of your organizational review. So, Chairperson, I think we need a clarity, especially under the issue of human capital management. How are you going to do that? Whether are you integrating or is a change management process, or you are starting afresh, which is the treasury need to be part of that to cause the structure of SASSA. But again, in all this process of SASSA, where are your employees? Because we know that you do have labor representatives. As we speak now, I hope they are aware that there's a, this document that listening to us when you said there will be an organizational review. Did you put them in confidence to say there's this thing that is coming to SASSA? I don't know if the last question that I'm having is on the reduction of cash payment points. I wanted to know which province is more affected in terms of the 20%, so that maybe we know if it's Gauteng or it's KZN, you know, so that, and with that 20% of reduction, what communication are you having with our recipient to say that maybe Benukhola Ipelegeng, starting from next month, you must know that Ipelegeng has been closed. So did you talk to the people, or are you still coming on that? No, thanks, Chairperson.
Okay.
Now, oh, Chair, sorry, the last one is under the issue of risk. You said there are 30 high risk, what? There are 30 high risk issues that I think you have flagged. Which one are those? Can maybe just share one that we need to know? Maybe in future we must get those 30 risks, all of them, so that we know them. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. It's the time for the team to respond. Therefore, the acting CEO, the power is yours. You will be instructing who responds to what. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the committee members. And some were definitely comments that would take into account in our execution of the plan, but would attempt to answer some questions, and the team will also fill in, you know, in certain areas. With regard to the first question of phasing in, phasing out of the card, yes, there was an agreement that and a communication to that effect that the card life will expire at the end of December, but the card swap program will happen before December. So a card replacement can happen even before the other one actually expires. So in other words, what we will be doing is just to explain and clarify this message that says the card is expiring at the end of December. But swapping it, you can change it at any time. Like a bank, when they have introduced certain products and they would want you to come and get a new card, whatever, they can do it at any time. So, but the reason that it was agreed that it must be at the end of December was to ensure that the beneficiaries do not panic that now the contract is coming to an end and therefore the card will expire. So the card definitely will expire at the end of December, but the swap and the replacement of the of those cards will actually is actually underway as we speak. And the next question was regarding the 95% vacancy rate. I'll leave that to Sistandi to comment on. And in regard to the office of the CEO, I've been about 3 days there in, but I understand that there's 8 out of 9 vacancies there. We would want to say to the committee would expedite the process, because certainly the issue that came about recently was that upon the appointment of a new minister, she needed to be taken through the whole process and also be part of the review of the org structure. So for the next 2 months or so, that process will be unfolding, and therefore, but priority definitely will be given to make sure that the 8 over 9 vacancies in the office of the CEO are definitely filled accordingly and with the deserving candidates. There was a question with regard to the review of the target. Will you answer that one, Mr. Sapasha? And then the 70% fraud reported cases to be investigated, and as to what about the other 30%? Well, the target here was to measure that of all the fraud cases that are reported, at least 70% of those should be investigated, because some of the cases, they take quite long, especially when these cases now must go out to be investigated. They involve the police and so on and so on. So it's quite a lengthy process, but we were trying to measure at least what we must strive towards, not that the 50% is not important, but also to emphasize that the 30% means may overflow into the following financial year. But that the standard that we would seek to achieve now was to achieve the 70% resolution or investigation of the reported fraud cases. With regard to the 116 offices upgrade, here it refers to the, we have looked at the infrastructure requirements based on the office requirements in terms of the bandwidth they require or the size of operations they run, then we prioritize those. Some of them will not need to be upgraded.
Maybe can I ask Honorable Umasango, do you mean them acquiring more infrastructure and budgeting for it, or do you mean them involved in actual construction? I wanted the clarity before they respond.
Chair, I was saying that at some stage one was told that there's public works that provides building infrastructure, and so one wants to know, can we just can SASSA not keep to its core mandate, which is using the infrastructure but not actually physically constructing buildings? Thanks, Chair. Because I think when I mentioned it the last time, the Chair even said there are even standards and whatever that SASSA may not be knowing and getting into construction when they shouldn't. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. This one, Sistandi, will answer it, because it refers to the footprint infrastructure, the fiscal offices, and the one I was answering here was actually the ICT connectivity infrastructure. But Sistandi will elaborate on the footprint infrastructure, which is the offices that we use. So the 116 offices are those that are prioritized, because they are the size of the infrastructure they have needs to be upgraded, but others may not need to be upgraded because they are already, when you look at the sizing of the infrastructure, it can contain the requirements of the processing in those particular offices. So as and when the growth of business in a particular district or area is recorded on our system, that is when we actually then start the improvement program before the system can actually collapse or be overloaded.
Chair, even if perhaps they don't answer it now,
I think we are interested in knowing exactly where are those 116 offices located. Because where I'm sitting in my constituency in Botshabelo, if you can go to Botshabelo office, the infrastructure there is very bad. There are no air cons. It's the whole day. You can imagine when people are there, beneficiaries are there in a situation where there are no air cons, and they have requested to have air cons for a long time, but up until now nothing has been provided. So really we are interested so that as we do our work we are able to locate those offices and perhaps assist them with those offices that really need more attention. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I got it. The 116 are actually nationally, but you can give the breakdown to say how many are in which province and how many are in which region. In terms of the implementation of the biometrics, yes, we have written there to eliminate or to reduce fraudulent practices around system access and so on. It is really a fact that in the cyber environment, you do the best you can, but you cannot be complacent and say things cannot happen in a way. So we strive to be insulated from fraudulent activities via system access. However, it is possible that somehow as we improve the system, there are other improvements in that particular warfare, as it were. So we are just indicating that we are committed to making sure that the incidence of fraud for system access are reduced to the bare minimum. We would eradicate them, but we can't come and say to the committee today there will be zero fraudulent activity after implementation of any system. You'll always have certain things that are residual, but we are very much vigilant to make sure that we reduce those to the bare minimum. With regard to the question that says, does SAPO have infrastructure? There has been an exercise that was undertaken between us and SAPO to look at what infrastructure do they have in terms of footprint and offices, and what it is that SAPO has, and in what radius are these existing from each other, one another. And so definitely SAPO does have infrastructure. Certain offices at the point in time that were operational in the SAPO environment probably were closed because there wasn't business, but with this partnership and collaboration, such infrastructure may need to be revamped and be used particularly to ensure that our beneficiaries are having easy access, or the access to infrastructure is improved. So SAPO does have infrastructure from the post offices, some of them that were not really fully utilized. Some of them were closed, but they were never removed. They're just standing there idle. So the collaboration effort will make sure that that infrastructure is revamped and utilized in this joint partnership with SAPO as an organ of state.
Honorable Masango, I'm not hearing very well. Is SASA doing this work internal to repair and revamp the offices? Because the understanding is that all the client departments, they budget for what is supposed to be done, and then they refer it to Public Works. Public Works is the department that is earmarked. It's mandate to provide accommodation for client department, for all the departments. I'm not hearing well whether are you doing it for yourself now? Because I think Honorable Masango will be correct if you are saying that you budget, you also deal with the implementation of it, because the mandate, that's what we are asking. What is your mandate? What is the mandate of Public Works?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this will be lumped together with the one that Sister Andy will answer with regard to the infrastructure revamp. And the other question on the lease payments, I think the CFO will cover that one. And the one on the fraud cases, Sister Andy can assist us on those ones. How many were closed in 2017-18? And then to try and look at the target feasibility and reachability thereof. I think Sister Andy will also answer on that one. The unqualified audit to say if there are repeat findings or if we are aiming at the unqualified audit, what is it that we are doing to make sure that we reach the target? I think the CFO will answer that one. What I can say is that we have a regular interaction in between the or in the course of the financial year with the Auditor General to review and put in place action plans to review how far we are in terms of remediating the shortfalls that were picked up by the previous audit. But the CFO will elaborate on that particular item. I think this one on regarding page 12, funded posts, do they include the executive assistant? Will also answer to that one. And the one on property cleaning and maintenance. And then with regard to the issue of the acting CEO having requested to go back to KZN, and the question that is the current project lead going to be referred back to Northwest, what I can report to the committee is that upon the first time that the matters of acting were raised, we have reviewed the whole secondment framework, and once we have finalized that, in fact, legal has finalized that and sent it to our office to have a look, we will actually handle each and every secondment on merit based on that particular framework without any exception. With regard to the communication, the head of communication is here. We do admit, though, to the committee that communication has to be intensified, particularly in a targeted way per region, in the language that our people will understand what is it that the government is trying to do during this dispensation. So if Mr. Letat would like to add in terms of the strategies that we have developed to intensify communication, he can do so. Well, and then the CFO will also cover the issue of the handling fees and the savings that will be realized as a result of not filling in the position. I think the position that we hold is not that we want to curtail costs at the expense of not employing people, but I think the as the year progresses and there is delay, for example, for the next 2 months where we cannot be filling, for example, one or two posts, eventually there will be some savings, unfortunately, but it is not a principal decision that says let us delay filling of vacancies so we can save money. At the end of the day, we'll have an underspending in the cost of employees in any case. So that is not the belief that you hold, or that's not how we intend, you know, running the organization. And the one on why SAS involved in construction, I think Sistandi will deal with that. This question that says, how sure are we that by the end of September, CPS will no longer be there? We have come to the committee here on several occasions making undertakings. Yes, we have hit a lot of speed humps, but we have reported this afternoon that there are demonstrable results that says we have taken over certain functions. We have awarded a contract to SAPO, which takes a big chunk of the services that were rendered by CPS, to the extent that the only service that will be terminating at the end of September 2017-18 is the one for cash, which has got, you know, has had its own challenges. But we are able to show where we have started. For example, we mentioned that until, you know, in April, we had not done the beneficiary enrollment on our own system by our own people, but now we have installed that function. We have indicated that, and that it means it's part of phasing out CPS. Then we have done the regulation and management of deductions. We have totally phased out CPS in that regard. We have done ACB transfers directly to the beneficiaries' banks. That is part of phasing out CPS. So there's been quite a measurable milestones that have been reached in the process of reducing the scope of services that CPS is rendering. And we are reporting today that at the end of September, the plan that we have is to make sure that the cash component that has been extended by the Concord to be rendered by CPS will come to an end. And to that effect, there are plans in place that we are monitoring almost on a daily basis to make sure that that gets realized so that we do comply with the court directives in all respects. I think I've answered the one on the post in the office of the CEO, and then the organizational efficiency target, I think Sam Hopper can comment on that. The issue of change management, it is true that when an organization is undergoing transition or transformation, there must be a strong change management and messaging that is related to that particular change. And to that effect, I can clearly report that, in fact, Rapatram Hupa is the change management lead within the organization. She has presented the approach to change management and communication, and she will, you know, if needs be, that particular approach can be presented at this committee when required, and Ms. Ramkhopa can add if she wants to add in that regard. I think I can leave the rest with regard to the issue of risk. Sistandi can answer to that, and the reduction of cash pay points. Sister Rapati can cover it to some detail. Safe to say that in the process of giving beneficiaries options, recently a survey was actually done, or by way of giving information to the banks. In fact, 80% of our beneficiaries do have bank accounts that are active, and the banks confirm that they do have. So in other words, if there are facilities that are idling, these pay points that are idling, in fact, that they are no longer actually as popular as they used to be, the strategy is to make sure that we reduce those in consultation with the communities, and our approach, among others, is to ensure that the traditional leaders are informed in whatever activity we do that pertains to the people in the area, and then we'll involve local councillors. We will do, you know, if needs be, field work to find the people to communicate face-to-face, a typical IEC style, you know, or, you know, census style, to reach out to the people to convey the message about how government is contemplating paying grants going forward, and to improve also their experience with regard to beneficiary payment. And some of them would be, what are the benefits of using the multiple channels that now government is putting at their disposal through the grant payment system. Madam Chair, can I then ask Madam Ramkhopa to answer one or two other questions, and then the CFO, and then my colleagues?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Acting CEO. Chairperson, if you allow me, through the CEO, maybe I should explain. The last time I interacted with this panel, I was interacting as the head of internal audit. I'm sure the Chairperson, the Honorable Chairperson, can remember. Today I'm wearing a different cap because I've since been seconded to corporate services, to lead corporate services. So I'm not here as head of internal audit, but as head of corporate services now. acting, yes. I'll start with a question around the 95% of vacant funded posts. SASA, like any other organization, applies the international standards of human resources that says for an organization to be fully effective, you at least need 95% of your vacancies filled at any given time. So that's why we're striving for the 95% filled. If we achieve more than that, then it's a bonus. But it's unlikely that you'll have all 100% posts filled at any given time, because as you recruit people, others leave the organization. So there'll always be that small percentage of vacant funded posts, because you cannot say, now I filled all my posts. As you think, today I filled all the posts, some people tender their resignation, or others get promoted. It means they vacate the post that they are holding to occupy higher positions. So that's why we always make that allowance for the 5%, but it's an international best practice that's adopted by most companies as well.
And the 95% that we're talking about of funded vacant posts includes, yes, all the regional posts are funded. So, however, in the meantime, as we go through this phase, the minister has decided that he needs to be given time to review all the vacant posts within the SASSA to determine whether we still really need all of them or there's a need probably to scale down. Because the fact that the post is vacant doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be filled. So we thought the minister is new, let's give her the opportunity to familiarize as well, to get to understand what's happening in the organization, especially because most of those posts are posts of people who will be leading the different regions. So we thought let's give her that space as well to apply her mind to some of these posts. And Honorable Member Mukhotsi, the posts that we're talking about do not include the occupied posts. So the staff members are not going to be affected in any way as we review the structure. We're reviewing the structure with a view to cater for the new payment functions because we've never previously had posts dealing with the payment aspect of our work. So it's only now then that we're reviewing the structure to define the functions to be performed between us and the post office with an understanding that they'll be providing some of the functions and then determine how many posts do we require at what levels as well. And that's a review that we're talking about. The other question was with regards to SASSA, whether SASSA has an opportunity to rent to buy. Yes, ma'am, that's one of the things that we've always considered. And I link that question with the question of why is SASSA involved in construction. In terms of the SASSA Act, the Minister of Social Development is required to and has the ability actually to find or office accommodation on behalf of SASSA. Remember, SASSA is a public entity and not necessarily a government department. That's why the SASSA Act does allow the minister to get into that space of acquiring or renting or even disposing office accommodation on behalf of SASSA. So we apply that specific section of the legislation to allow us. The challenge has been you continuously rent. But when you look at the cost benefit of doing that, you realize that you're actually not benefiting because you could have as well constructed. And the CFO who were debating it, he said to me, you must respond to that question because you are the one who brought this thing of building offices for SASSA. When I was seconded to the Northern Cape as a regional executive manager, I went around looking for office accommodation. All I could find was dilapidated buildings that were available for rental. But when I considered the cost of actually renovating those buildings, whether we do it or Public Works does it, it was really not justified. So I decided that we can rather get land from the traditional authorities and build a new office. Then we don't have to pay rental at all going forward. We'll just pay for municipal services. But we know that the building belongs to SASSA. But in terms of the agreement that we have with Public Works provide a technical support to SASSA because we do not have quantity surveyors and all those people who are qualified in the building industry. So even with those buildings, they are going to be constructed by the Independent Development Trust, which is a public entity of the Department of Public Works. So they are done under the auspices of Public Works, so those SASSA will be paying for them, and they belong to SASSA. So one day if we want to vacate, we can either transfer that building to the Department of Public Works, or we can alternatively even rent it out to somebody else and make money as SASSA. So that was the whole rationale of us getting into that space with... Thank you, Chairperson, and I will confirm it that yes, we are struggling with Public Works, and Honorable Member mentioned that there are offices in the Free State where there's no air conditioning, the offices are small and all that, and that's precisely because we're relying on public works in some instances to find office accommodation. But something that we presented as well was the infrastructure, the 10-year infrastructure plan that we'll be developing this year. That plan is supposed to enable us to determine and also to do an audit of the office infrastructure that we're occupying. Do we have the right offices at the right places to service the right communities? Because you find in some instances that you do not have a SASSA office within the area where you actually your beneficiaries are located, but instead you have an office somewhere else in an urban area where there are no beneficiaries. So the infrastructure plan will be looking at all that then. With regards to the question of Honorable Masango, appointment of people and whether is it not possible for us to appoint fit and proper people with the correct attitude. We are trying, but remember, when people come for an interview, they all look fit and proper because there's paperwork that you consider and they are at their best behavior, at their best behavior when you interview them. And on that basis, then you decide that this is a person who's fit and proper to hold this position, only to surprise you after you've confirmed the probation. You know, then you put them through a probation period for a year. Once you confirm the probation period, then they show you their true colors. And then it becomes really difficult then to get rid of them then because the labor relations kick in and so there's a whole lot of things. But we try our best. We do pre-employment screening of these people to make sure that they are the proper people. But it becomes really difficult sometimes to determine the attitude at that stage. I think my question sounded many. Okay, the other question then, let me put on my other cap, the fraud cap. In the previous financial year ended 31st of March 2018, we have received 430 cases, fraud cases. And some of those cases, of course, involved syndicate cases. We take very, very long to investigate. And we were able to finalize 322, and then with the remaining then overlapping into the next financial year. So that's why then we decided that you can never at any given time be able to finalize all the cases that you receive, 100%. There will always be those cases that will overlap to the next one, probably because of information that you require or the availability of some of the people that needs to be part of the investigation, like your beneficiaries. Sometimes beneficiaries are very reluctant to participate in these investigations. You have to nag them. You have to some extent, even try to bribe them or try to intimidate them because you know that they facilitated that fraud because that's why they are involved. But then they are unwilling in most cases to participate for fear of being arrested as well. So that then delays the finalization of some of the cases on time. Oh, there was a request that we provide at least one project that will be audited, one of the risk areas that will be projected. I'm sure the members are aware that SASSA has decided a few years ago to insource fleet management. Previously, we had an outsourced service, so we decided to insource. What we realized over time was that the cost of maintenance and repairs has suddenly gone up, which suggests that there could be an element of waste or an element of some wrongdoing. So we decided that that's one of the projects that internal audit will focus on this year, just to make sure that we, as we change the strategy, it's informed by facts and figures and not just on emotions. But we are concerned about repairs and maintenance, especially around vehicles. There was a question about why we're not creating permanent posts for cleaners. I think it was from Honorable Member Kainile. Unfortunately, the model that SASSA adopted since its inception was that of outsourcing some of the services that do not relate to its core business, like your security, cleaning services. We decided to such an extent that the organizational structure of SASSA does not provide for posts for cleaners. However, this has been a debate that has been going around for some time now to say probably we need to insource the service in some instances. For example, you might have an office that is far away from other offices. Now, to get a service provider to go there and provide cleaning material and then probably get somebody from far away to take to that area to go in, it becomes costly in some instances. So as we review the organizational structure, those are some of the issues that we'll be factoring in to determine whether we cannot really appoint permanent staff in some, especially the rural, far away offices from everything else, because it will work out cheaper even if we get the service provider to provide the service. I want to believe I've consulted. Oh, okay, the consultation with officials, I mentioned that when we, this organizational review is not going to really involve the permanent, the staff that's available now. However, there's been a lot of consultation with organized labor in terms of where SASA wants to go, because we believe that we need to bring labor on board for us to do anything. There are services that we've already, in a way, insourced, but I wouldn't use the word insourced, we've reactivated them. The issue of biometric enrollment, we did previously enroll beneficiaries as officials of SASA. Our local office used to take fingerprints of our beneficiaries, but they used to use the ink. So we just replaced the ink with a biometric reader, which doesn't really constitute a new function, because it's the same function that they've been previously providing. It's just that now we're not doing it manually, we're doing it electronically. However, we felt it was important to negotiate with the unions. So we consulted with the unions just to inform them. But this is definitely not a new function. And it's a pity that it is interpreted as a new function, because people believe it was performed by CPS. But before CPS, SASA used to perform that function. However, we are continuing to negotiate with the unions. There's even a meeting scheduled, I think tomorrow, with the unions, just to bring them up to speed with how far we are with the transition now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, it is. Just it triggered me. The head of corporate services, Sistandi, who is the head of internal audit now, because you were very impressed the last time, asked you a lot of questions regarding the internal audit, and were very impressed. We'd like to know who's heading that very important acting position. And then also the exit interviews. Does SASA do exit interviews, because the turnover of staff is very high, so that you know. When you interview them, then ask them the exit questions, so then you know they won't exit quickly. And then also very interesting, Chairperson, the traditional land, the authorities there. My question there is, who does the building infrastructure belong to? We understand the land and so on, because I've asked that question a couple of months ago in the ECD, when development takes place within personal houses and developments take place from SASA side. This is the ECDs. In a homeowner, and you upgrade that, how does that benefit the ordinary person versus the person with an ECD? But not an ECD, you don't need to respond there. I want to just know on the traditional land. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The head of internal audit now is the GM. Nobody is acting in the position. The general manager, who used to report to me, now reports directly to the CEO to enable the function to remain independent, because I cannot be the auditor and the auditee at the same time. So that person will report directly to the CEO, and we believe she's senior enough to be able to handle that. However, remember, the function was also clubbed with risk management, which has now been transferred temporarily to strategy and business development. But the internal audit itself reports directly to the CEO to maintain its independence. Yes, SASA does exit interviews, though with its exit interviews, people are not really, really honest in terms of what went wrong or their reasons for leaving the organization. Because, you know, there's belief that people don't leave organizations, but they leave managers. People leave because of managers and not necessarily because they don't like the organization. But it becomes difficult for people to tell you the honest facts about why they are leaving the organization. But we do those, and from time to time, we then do a summary and present those to management just to give them a picture, especially on areas where you find that there's a high
staff turnover, because that becomes a concern, and those are the issues then that we bring to the attention of those managers. The land in the rural areas, the traditional land, belongs to the tribal authorities in the different. You can never buy from them. So the land belongs to the communities and is under the control of the tribal authorities. So what happens is that we are given permission to occupy, with an understanding that that building will always remain in that community and service that community. So if SASA wants to vacate the building, then there will always be somebody else who occupies that building, especially in rural communities, because infrastructure is very scarce. So, but the land doesn't belong to SASA because it cannot be sold to SASA. It will always belong to that tribal authority, and it will always be available for use by the community because it's a property of that community. Thank you.
Maybe to just clarify issues on that area, the traditional authority, in terms of that act, they actually are custodians of the community. That act allows them to hold the land in their possession on behalf of the community. So if there's going to be a school, a clinic, all what is done is to apply to the traditional authority. After consultation, then the official government, especially from land affairs, will come and demarcate according to the required size. So it is never for sale because it belongs to the community in the custodianship of the traditional authority as chaired by the chief there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The two questions that I've been asked by the CEO to deal with. The one part is, what are we doing actually to get unqualified audit report? Has the issues raised by the AG addressed so far? Yes, I can say that, Chair, we have already developed a year-end plan, which I have approved. It has all the steps that need to be done and the high-risk areas that the AG was concerned about, and assign responsibilities, which we check every week to deal with it. What we have done for the year 20, which is currently probably will be finalized before I do the final financial statement now in May, is to review all existing contracts, because the issues that were raised, which led to the qualifications, were only two. One was the irregular expenditure, which is the completeness of the register. So what we have done is that because the AG audit on a sample, so we'll have to really review all contracts. Currently, there's a project that's reviewing all the contracts, likely to be concluded just around the 10th, the 15th of May. So we will have reviewed all the contracts that are existing within SASA, which include your leasing and old contracts. Then you will know which contract did comply with SCM process or which one did not comply with the SCM process. So those that did not comply will form with part of what we call irregular expenditure, and we'll have to really deal with the regularization of those contracts, including of the damages and losses. We have already done a training on the issues of local content, because one of the issues was the training on the local content. We have already asked DTI has done training for all supply chain management officials. We have also requested the CIDB to do the training on the CIDB Act that was concluded. So we did not necessarily expect any further issues around that area. We also have done and introduced what we call a pre-audit, when you, after the BAC has awarded or recommended the tender, before the CEO or the REM approves that tender, it goes through the SCM compliance unit. So we have built that unit, we established it. It's an independent unit that reviews every step to make sure that any adjudication of that tender did comply with the SCM process, which they give an independent review of that issue in relation to that. We have looked at all the items that are risk in terms of the qualification. Honorable members will remember that the financial statement of SASA for the year 2016-17, there was nothing wrong except the transactions outside the system. So within the system, the AG did confirm that the financial statement were presented correctly, but transactions outside the system, which is the irregular expenditure, was a suspect. So what we have done, we have got internal control that is currently running a project with all the regions to validate the register, to check every transaction, what has been placed there, whether was it supposed to be there or wasn't supposed to be there. And where we are not comfortable, we ask Treasury for guidance in terms of the interpretation of that transaction. And that's run through my office. So we are on track, actually, to really look the posting of transactions to the correct places in terms of the financial statement. So we're very confident and optimistic that the process we've put leading to the 2017-18, we shouldn't have a qualification. That's what we are working around it. And we have got a team that is very supportive across the regions that are working around it. So we are very optimistic of that process going forward. I am responsible for that process. And in other instances, then I have to focus largely with internal control to look at that. There was a question that talks about whether Honorable Masango asked the question whether when everything said and done, will do project any savings in relation to the handling fees of about 2.3 billion. Honorable members will note that currently the handling fees which we are currently going to be paying, it will be the handling fees relating to the cash payment, which is only the portion which the Constitutional Court has extended, and also the handling fees relating to SAPO agreement. So if you look at what Mayor Ramkhupa has already spoken about and said, we are also having pay points which are actually in a SAPO outlet within the yard. So we have our pay point where SAPO is. So if you move that pay point into the SAPO, already you're going to be paying less because we're looking at paying about 12 rand 53 cent. Initially, we agreed that 12 rand 41. So with the 1% increase on VAT, so we're looking about paying 12 rand 53 instead of whatever amount that Treasury recommended or the Constitutional Court would give us. So if they said 45 rand, that's what we should be paying CPS. So if you move that pay point into SAPO, then you're saving the difference between the 12 rand 53 and the 45 rand that will be charged. The other portion of it is that we are having an agreement with SAPO which said the transaction fee for SAPO is 6.71, which is less than what currently we were being charged in terms of the CPS model. So if you really get that payment file to go to SAPO, you are projecting a saving. Because we're not responsible for now for paying any subsidy for the people that are already in the banks, those transactions have always, all the time, actually be for the beneficiary as part. So in that instance, then you'll have a projected savings. We understand that once everything has been implemented, we'll have to review the payment model and everything. But we're projecting probably we're going to have, if I look at the figures before me, if I look at that, probably we'll have about 9 million savings, projected savings, ideally, if ever then you implement everything like what Treasury is saying. If the 51 rand, if you take the 2 million, you're likely to, in the whole year, if ever you were to pay 51 million, even if you were to find another sales provider to pay 51 rand as projected or recommended by Treasury, you're looking at about paying 1 billion on that. If you take all the beneficiaries to be paid through SAPO, you're paying the 6.78 VAT inclusive with 15%, you're looking at about paying 55 million per month. Well, you're looking at just under a billion for SAPO payment. So you're looking at about probably 10 million savings around it. But if then all the people were to choose SAPO, you will have a lot of savings around the payment of grant assistance. The key issue is that whether we'll find actually available facilities within communities, whether banks or whoever will be able and merchants will be able to grow their footprints into the villages where people are. And if you were to find merchants going that route, we will really, really save a lot of money around it. Then that money can be channeled in terms of service delivery, but also improving the infrastructure within the agency. So I think those are the two questions that I was requested to respond to, Honorable Chair.
Okay, there is also Mama Ramho.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I'll just clarify further the issue of the cash reduction strategy. Just to say maybe we request that part key to the strategy to reduce cash, not necessarily reduce cash, but to manage the cash component is that we want to phase out CPS. And for us to phase out CPS, the first element is to get beneficiaries to have a different card. So for the next 2 months, we'll be intensive on the card swap. And in some cases, it may come with some bit of inconvenience. As we go, we intensify the card swap process. We may have some longer queues for people to, but we want to make sure that for those beneficiaries that are at cash points, if they have alternative plan, then it's easier to start taking, ensuring that where do they get the money after they have, where you have a gadget. But if they don't even have a gadget where you can deposit money, it becomes a challenge to do so. So the other element that was questioned was whether where are the pay points that we are likely to reduce? Gauteng is likely to have more pay points that we are going to reduce. Why? Because if you look in the Pretoria City Centre, just at the showground, there's a pay point there. And when you look at the infrastructure around it, there's a lot of merchants, lot of shops, lots of ATMs. So already we have assessed, and there's even post office in that vicinity that could take for those that are not able to utilize, who are still want to utilize the biometric. So Gauteng already, currently in Gauteng, you have 144 pay points, and 126 of those pay points are located within places where there's alternative payment infrastructure. And when you start interviewing people, when you go to pay points, even the young people, when you ask them, why don't you tell us alternative? No, you want to see our secrets, because they have other cards and they don't want to reveal the situation because it's an alternative. So in one way or another, there's also the issue of people being compliant. They are just used to utilizing a particular service and they are compliant with that. 8 million of our beneficiaries have active accounts with other banks, and it has just been confirmed by the banks that we gave the information to. And when you look at them, most of them are child support grant recipients. So they can still remember their PIN codes and so on. So the intention is not to inconvenience the older persons, but to encourage those that are mobile and have access to alternative facilities to utilize those. But our intention is to ensure that in the next 2 months, we intensify the card swap process. In as much as the card closes in December, but we want to eliminate it as soon as possible so that we can already start to make sure that we come with alternative strategies for those that are not able to access their money. So we do apologize that there may be some bit of inconvenience in the process of doing that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I'd just like to know, with this intensification, how is it communicated to the beneficiaries? We're sitting here, we're hearing, but how does the beneficiaries know about what you're telling us now?
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Just triggered off what you said on a question my constituency asked me to ask, and I didn't ask it. You know, when it comes to the child support grant, and they don't want you to see their business. Many a times people are working. Now, how do you verify that this person has got a job now? Because someone said in the constituency you can use UIF or you can use SARS. So what do you do about it? Because I know many come to us for proof of address. And then after some time we find out they're working at Checkers or they're working at ShopRite, things like that. Oh, pick and pay, thank you.
Madam Chair, on the one on communication, I think Dr. Elita Tsuhona will answer that one. And then the one on CST, Sisam Ramkhop.
Thank you, Acting CEO. That's the Acting EM for Grants Admin, but I will make another. Okay. I think that with the requirement that we have, currently the measures that we use with SARS, they are not allowing us to do the direct verification. We can do check with PESAL. We have online verification with the PESAL system. We don't. I don't think we have an online verification with UIF for now. And the other requirement is that people must give us the 3 months bank statement. And I think because they are avoiding that part, that's why most of them would go for the option of the cash, so that we never have to see what is happening within the qualification criteria. So, but I think Kolide can add if there's more information.
Do I say, is that part, we know it's there, but I think it is going to need a more sensitive approach, because most people, they actually apply when they know that they are having a job, but as long as they can cheat and buy their way through, which means it's another approach where we want to entice them out of the department. Hence, we were actually hammering during the day that let's make it to be more competitive, being in a job and so on. You can see that's why there is this Honorable Malchas is one who debates this more than anyone in the house. The one on universalization of child support grant, which will be direct to children, at least that it must not be, because I mean there are a lot of challenges in what the Honorable Member is asking, but I think we'll take it a little bit further when we, because it can't change now, but it's a matter that I agree with you, but it can't help us now as we deal with the APPs. Is there something left? Communication, yes.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The question asked by Honorable Abrams, I think it's about the communication plan which we have. What we have done, we have realized that as much as we are going to roll it out, or it has been rolling out through commercial media, we have just decided as an organization to add other channels of communications. And I can just mention them quickly. Like, we have decided that it's important for us to engage with traditional leaders, because especially in rural areas, we think that the message can permeate very easily to the people in traditional areas. One aspect is about using counselors in communities to make sure that the message about the card swap and the new SASSA card goes through. We're also going to partner with the schools, because we believe that at the school, there is a child who's benefiting, or the child knows somebody. So we thought that principals during assemblies, they can be able to pass the message, and we're saying the message must be passed in the language of the choice, so that they can be able to pass the information to their mothers or to the grandparents and so on. And I think one of the most important element is the churches, because we think that if this message is passed in the churches, we would be able to penetrate the communities, would be able to share the message as well. The most important one as well is African language stations. As much as we know that we do commercial media, but if you speak to Ukhozi Umhlobo weNelisedi Thobela Motswedi, I can assure you that you have already penetrated as many people as possible. So those are some of the channels, Chairperson, which we think we must do. We're also going to do door-to-door, because sometimes we think visiting people at their area of where they stay and you are able to talk, it's a contact communication. You don't necessarily communicating with our people through a soundbite. You know, if you communicate with our people through a soundbite of five seconds, sometimes the message does not go through. But if you go to them doing door-to-door, we know that we'll be using resources which are available, especially at our disposal. The other last one, Chairperson, is about the meet and greet. We have actually agreed that in the morning at our local offices, there's nothing wrong for a local office manager to go to the queues there and able to communicate and interact with our beneficiaries. And that's what we call contact communication. We're not totally discarding speaking through commercial media, but we think sometimes it's important for us to use these particular channels. One important one is about the imbizos and using the iCrop. We think our political principals, as well as they do these particular things, and our staff members must be able to share this information to the communities. Thanks, Chairperson.
Usis Tandi, I think is trying by all means to impress these members that she does not go to heading audit again. Can you see she's actually
comfortable in this new one of she's not here. She was there before. Okay. Let's keep it a secret. I said it because she was not in here. I think acting CEO who actually presented had done their homework. I'm not saying it was good or what, but they know their business. They know what they are talking about. So we think, despite all the way, SASSA goes a long way. Long way, just like NGA. They've been here with this government. I think as long as the new government has been here, they are as old as Parliament, since they are established by the Act of Parliament. But I think if I was in a class, I would say I understand your issues better. I haven't started to say because they are good or we have made progress, but I mean understanding what this is all about has been actually achieved. So I think you did some good work, but honorable members, we'll take all these matters then into our report and follow the APP process as the portfolio committee going to up to the budget level. But I think staying here, all of you, starting from social development, NDA, and then SASSA, you made us to be able to finalize, to end this within the same time frame that we were not believing is going to be there. I think the message will be conveyed to the Deputy Minister and the Minister on how the feedback after you went to do your work. After the feedback, I think you covered and you were skillful enough to leave no gray areas that know what a question like this might come. So we thank you for your presentation, acting CEO, former CIO. Thank you very much, especially that you're talking about COO now, because we get very worried when departmental work is not coordinated before it arrives to the head, because you begin to have many people reporting to you and you end up not being able to consolidate, to convey the right messages to your executive authority. So for the progress you have made in addressing the issue of stability as well as populating the relevant critical posts, we agree you've done a good work. Thank you very much. Honorable members, can we now call it a day, but ours is to allow our visitors, our guests to leave. But as the members of the portfolio committee, just remain for 5 minutes to consolidate. When are we approving the report? Oh, I'm told there's dinner. But I wasn't told to whether to invite. But probably. Okay. Okay. You are invited. You are invited.
But I think they look good. These are other things.
Yeah,
Actually making our report process.
Okay, can we? Okay, honorable members. Honorable members, although we were supposed to remain for 5 minutes, because I can see you talking with the members, let's go for lunch.
Also known as supper.